Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to today's internet webcast on getting in step, developing your message, and publicizing it effectively. It's sponsored by EPA's Office of Wetlands, Oceans, and Watersheds and the Watershed Academy. My name is Susan Sagan. I'm with OWOW, and I'll be moderating today's session. We will get started in a few moments. But while we wait for others to join, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping items. This is very important as our seminar is filled to capacity today. When you registered, you were directed to the seminar's specific URL, which is the front page of today's seminar. The front page of the webcast contains a short abstract of today's session. We've also included pictures and a short bio sketch of our presenter, Charlie McPherson. Please note that Charlie's email address is hotlinked on that page in case you have any follow-up questions for Charlie after today's presentation. For those of us joining via the phone lines, we require that you put your phone on mute for the seminar. We will have a question and answer session several times through today, at which point you are welcome to take your phone off mute and ask a question when you are called on. Due to the high number of participants, all questions may not be asked or answered. If you do not have a mute button on your telephone, we ask that you take a moment right now to hit the asterisk 6 to place your phone on mute. When we get to the question and answer period, you can hit pound 6 to unmute the phone. This will greatly reduce background noise that can disrupt quality of the audio transmission. For those of you who participated last time, we did have some comments that the audio wasn't that clear, and we're trying to address those today. Our speaker will be wearing a headset, and we're asking everyone to be conscientious about keeping their phones on mute to reduce background noise. By now, you should have clicked on the agenda for today's go-to session icon and be on slide number 1 of the presentation. The main page contains the slides, above which you will find navigation icons in orange and blue. You may submit a question by using the question icon you see above the slides. You do not need to wait until the question and answer period to submit your questions. In fact, we encourage you to submit questions in advance of the session by using the question mark button on the simulcast website. Please put your phones on mute and do not put your phones on hold. Many organizations have hold music or advertisements that can be disruptive to the rest of the call. Also, if you experience technical difficulties with the audio stream, you may use the question mark icon to alert us to the technical difficulties you are encountering. Please include a telephone number where we can reach you if you have any problems, and we will try to troubleshoot your problem. Those of you who would like the closed captioning feature activated, simply click on the CC icon above the slides and it will appear. Click on the icon a second time to deactivate the closed captioning feature. Charlie will be announcing the number of the slide to which he is moving. You may advance to the next slide using a single right arrow located above the slide or by clicking on the appropriate slide number in the left-hand frame. As stated earlier, we will have a few question and answer sessions. And at the end of the presentation, we will walk you through our links page, where we have assembled a series of documents and websites directly applicable to today's topic. This will stay with the seminar indefinitely, so you can access it after the presentation. We typically place these seminars in an archive with the soundtrack. In the near future, you'll be able to access the slides and hear the presentation as it was given today. Associated with the links page is an online feedback form. We ask that you consider filling out the feedback form. We do look at your comments as we continue to try to improve the content and delivery mechanisms. I think we're ready to kick off today's session. Today's speaker is Charlie McPherson. She's a public outreach specialist for Tetra Tech Incorporated, an environmental engineering and consulting firm. Charlie has worked with local, state, tribal, federal, and international communities to develop and implement effective watershed outreach and stakeholder involvement programs. She's developed training materials, videos, and written two guides, Getting in Step, a guide to effective outreach in your watershed, and Getting in Step, engaging and involving stakeholders in your watershed. Before I turn it over to Charlie, I remind phone participants to put your phone on mute. If you do not have a mute button, please hit the asterisk 6 now. Good afternoon, Charlie.
Thank you, Susan. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome the studio audience. I do feel that we're on a radio talk show here, and this afternoon we do have some special guests that we are going to be bringing in, as well as taking calls from our listeners out there. I also do want to caution you not to go ahead in the slides. that only click forward when I indicate. Otherwise, it may delete all this. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So what I'd like to just kind of set up today, I do wish I had the Terry Gross or Don Imus voice here, but you'll have to stick with me. What I want to do for these 2 hours and kind of the take-home for you.
Thing is, though, that you don't have, you guys don't talk, oh, they're not sitting there hearing what I'm saying. You can still hear them, but they can't hear you. It says it's connected, but I have no idea.
For me?
I can't hear Charlie anymore.
You can't hear Charlie? Could you hear it at all in the beginning?
Yes.
Okay, well,
all right, hang
can
on.
You hear me now?
Yes, you're on.
Okay.
Sorry about that. We're going to go ahead and, Charlie, why don't you go ahead and start at the beginning?
Okay.
Back to slide one.
Okay, we're going back to slide one. Okay, sorry about that, everyone. We know what happened. Don't worry. Anyway, what I'd like to do is just kind of set the stage for what we're going to be talking about for the next couple hours. We're going to set up the framework for developing an effective strategy, and then specifically we're going to be talking about messages. How can we develop these effective messages to reach the audiences that we need in order to achieve our goals and objectives? So I hope that will be the take-home message for you all today, that you'll be able to do a better job of developing these messages to help achieve your goals. So I'm moving on to slide number 2 now. And before I do these workshops, I always like to define what I mean by outreach, because I know it means different things to different people. And a lot of people, there's confusion with the difference between education, outreach, information, public involvement. When I use the word outreach, I mean that there's someone, you, your organization, that is communicating a message to an audience. And most importantly, you're looking for a response from that message. It is not a one-way communication. And we're going to be talking a lot about what kind of response you may want and how can you get that response. And this is where I think for too long in kind of the environmental world, we go out with messages because it's the right thing to do. And we kind of have to change the way we're doing things. Moving on to number 3, you also have to recognize that in your outreach efforts, the outreach that you do is going to change over time. You can't continually go out with the same message, because as your audience becomes aware of the issues, you need to educate them about the solutions. You know, what are the problems? What are the solutions? And finally, where we all need to go is to action. Knowledge is not enough. It's not good enough that people know what to do if they don't actually do it. So how can we move to the action part? Moving on, number 4. We're going to use the Lego model today in terms of building an outreach strategy. And we proceed through the building blocks, starting at the bottom and going through each step. And this is similar to developing, if you're making a batch of cookies using a recipe, that if you skip a step or substitute something, you're not going to have as good a product as if you go through each step, ask the right questions, and get the information before putting it on.
I'm not going to go back down the process.
Yeah. So.
Is it the same as the book and the video?
Mm-hmm. Could I ask everyone to please put their phone on mute? We're picking up another background conversation besides Charlie speaking. If you don't have a mute button, you can use the *6. Would be the people that are laughing right now that I'm asking to mute your phone. Could I ask everybody who's listening to please mute their phone?
Okay.
Okay, thank you. All righty. So what I'd like to start, okay, we're on slide 4 now. Moving on to the next slide, number 5. The very first thing you need to ask yourself is, why are you doing this? Why do you feel you need to do outreach? And this might seem like it's an obvious question, but too often people start in the middle. They start with the, we want to do a fact sheet, we want a brochure, where you need to first identify the driving forces that is leading you to this very first step. And this will help you shape your goals and objectives. Now, moving on to number 6, you may have various reasons of why you feel you need to do outreach. Number 1 could be obvious water quality problems. But it might also be, in tandem with that, we've got new regulations. We've got stormwater, phase 2 regulations we need to meet. Maybe the need is coming from within the community, the public pressure that their lake is filling in with these algae and aquatic plants and it's not as attractive anymore. Maybe political pressure. Maybe the mayor's taking a lot of heat because they're getting beach closures. There's lots of different reasons why, and it's important to identify these early on. And so right now, moving on to number 7, if I could, I'd like to hear from you all why you feel you need outreach. How is outreach going to help you in your program?
Is there somebody on the telephone who would like to mention an issue that they're interested in talking to Charlie about for outreach?
Charlie, this is Paul McIver in Region 8.
Hi, Paul.
big issue we're facing here in Region 8, particularly in Colorado, is massive growth, and the growth, of course, is all a big concern because it's in places where we consider the environment very sensitive. And I talked to a developer out here in northern Colorado last May that has done a pretty good job of putting his development in a place where it would do the least environmental damage to the aquatic resource. There were wetlands and lakes involved. But he's a rare bird. We can't seem to get to the others. And so what we need is some kind of strategy that will allow us to make developers aware that what they do can and does impact the environment.
Okay. Yeah, that's a key issue that lots of folks are facing, development pressures, how to balance growth with environmental protection. And we definitely will touch on that today. That's a good point. Anyone else have some key issues, the driving forces?
Yes, Charlie, this is Patty Stone, Region 6, and our folks would like to talk about how you get an audience to take action.
Okay, and on what particular issue? Anything specific or?
In general.
Okay, so just in terms of apathy that people don't seem to care or?
It's getting them to change their behavior.
Okay. We will definitely touch on that.
This is Robert Ray with the state of Montana.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. We're in the process of updating our non-point source management plan.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for that plan to be successful, we need to have buy-in from the beginning, from the public, as to what the issues are and appropriate techniques, tools to address those issues.
Okay, so your driving force is one, it's kind of a regulatory issue. You've got to update this plan, and you want to make sure that the plan is achievable? by having the participation of the stakeholders up front?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. This is fun. Let's take another call.
Hi, Charlie. This is Pam from the City of American Canyon, California.
Hi, Pam.
And we are doing some water conservation, and, you know, it's projected in 2020 that our supply will certainly not meet our demand, so we're kind of trying to do a proactive conservation effort now. So that's my issue, water conservation, stormwater.
Okay, and great. And I've got a good example later on a very successful water conservation program and the techniques that they use.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's take maybe one more, and then we'll move on.
Okay, one more.
Hi, this is Evelyn, Region 2, Puerto
Rico. Hi, Evelyn.
Puerto Rico office.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm working in a project. We're developing the TMDLs in two of our watersheds.
Uh-huh.
So I'm pretty much interested on, you know, my purpose will be how to do, like, watershed approach, because it's two watersheds that we're going to be developing TMDLs, and we'd like to see how we're going to, like, approach this outreach when we start developing the, helping the state develop the TMDL.
Okay, is this too similar with the state of Montana to try to get stakeholder involvement?
Yes.
Ahead of time. Okay, great. Well, terrific. All very good issues. Okay, we're going to move on here. So a couple of these driving forces that you all mentioned, massive growth. How do you balance these development pressures that we're all facing? How do we get different audiences to take action? How do we get that buy-in from these audiences in the beginning so that they feel invested in some of these regulatory programs in terms of the non-point source program and TMDL, and then an issue as far as water conservation? Great. All issues that really can benefit from effective outreach. So once you know your issues and your driving forces, then you're going to begin yeah. to shape your goals. And now I think if people can put their phones back on mute, that would be terrific, because that helps me out a lot so I don't feel like I'm hearing voices in my head. We're going to start shaping the goals. And so if we can move on to number 8, very important to rough these out, even if you don't have a good idea, but this is your roadmap, and this is your goals are where you want to be. A lot of people also get hung up on the difference between a goal and a mission and a vision. And don't worry about that. But think in terms of a goal is going to be a broad statement that you may or may not achieve. That's okay, but it's something you want to shoot toward. I like to have my goals be part of the, not the outreach goal necessarily, but part of a larger environmental effort, because I like to have the outreach connected to the environmental results of what we're looking for. A lot of times I see these outreach programs off on their own, and they kind of lose their focus if they're not connected. So I like to start with a goal that's, you know, broad in terms of the larger environmental effort. And moving on to number 9, this graphic just shows you how you move from the broad to the specific. So whether you call it a goal, a mission, a vision, in order to move to the next level down to your objective, you ask yourself how. How are we going to achieve that goal? I know, for example, the Tuxent Riverkeeper, who I think is on the line today. I do know who you are out there, by the way, so I can call on you specifically. For the Tuxent Riverkeeper, their goal is to improve, protect, and preserve the river. Now, that's a humongous goal. So how are you going to do that? How is the Riverkeeper going to do that? Then you go down to the next level where you start shaping your objectives and your activities and tasks until you come down with a discrete unit. So let me give you some examples here. If we go to number 10,
for Missouri. We're going to improve the quality of Missouri's water resources through effective stormwater management. Wow. Okay. How are we going to do that? That's huge. We go to number 11. That's how. And we go down to objectives. The objectives should be something that you can attain and achieve, unlike your goal. So, for example, here, an objective might be to make the residents in Clark County aware of the impact of stormwater runoff. Okay, so that's the response. We're looking for awareness is the first one. And educate them. Okay, so we want to educate them so that 30% of them know what stormwater runoff is. So that's a measurement, a result, okay? We want to get 30% of people that can say they know what runoff is and can identify two management strategies. That's really starting to hone in specifically. Now, the one thing that I think is missing here that I would like to see is a time frame, within the next 6 months or the next year. The more specific that you can be at this stage, the easier it's going to be when you have to evaluate it. If you're vague and broad here, it's going to be very difficult to evaluate. So you want to strive for getting more specific. But even here, okay, we want to make them aware and educate them. That's great, but how are we going to do that? We still need to go to the next level on slide 12 for activities. Okay, how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to develop and distribute 5 newspaper inserts. And MS4 means the 4 S's are municipal separate storm sewer system. Thank you very much. Residents in Clark County within the next 12 months. So that's where I got my time frame in there. Even so, okay, that's still not enough. You need to go one more level down, where I like to end up with specific tasks. Okay, these are concrete on number 13. Okay, we're going to do these inserts, but what do we need? We need a logo. We need to figure out how we're going to distribute it, topic, layout. So if you can go through these steps to get down to this level, I think you're in really good shape because a lot of times, you know, people don't even get this far. Now, I'd like to open the lines back up for questions, and then we're going to do an interactive exercise. Oh, we have some online questions.
Charlie, we have a question from Anita in Carmelo, California, and she wants to say that her message is that funds are needed for programs to protect the environment. How do we solicit support from stakeholders?
Okay, so this is the fundraising part. That, to me, would be one of your driving forces that we will talk about in terms of, and I think this is where the message, how do you reach an audience with a message that is going to make them feel passionate about something to contribute money. Now, and this is where I'm assuming you're meaning funds are needed, like individual people to contribute, or you could mean funds in terms of getting grants and stuff. The grants part we'll talk about a little later as far as mechanisms to do this. But in terms of fundraising, we will talk about what messages are going to resonate with people to contribute. Do you have another question?
Carol, who works for the city of Davenport in Iowa, says their issue might be keeping the message of a water program simple. Also getting buy-in and paying for the stormwater program.
Okay, excellent. And I think that's sort of in tandem with that. I know there's a lot of issues around with rain taxes, stormwater utilities, so much negative press that people are just vehement against it. So how do you get people to realize that this is something worth paying for? And, again, this goes with the messages we'll talk about. If you pay a little now, it's going to save more later, those sorts of things. Are there any questions on the phone?
Yes, Charlie.
Yes.
You can hear me. We want to know how you're going to measure that 30%.
I'm going to talk to you about that.
I kind of thought you might.
Absolutely, and that's very important. And that's where with
typically pre and post surveys are very important.
Thank you, Joe.
And this is why you need to rough out your whole strategy before you start implementing, because so many times when you get to that evaluation point, they're like, oh, wouldn't that have been great if we did a baseline survey? And it's too late. So we will definitely talk about techniques for measuring, because I know that's paramount right now at EPA, getting measurable results. And for some of this social science stuff, it's kind of tricky.
And if, this is the moderator, if I could ask people when they ask a question to say who they are and, you know, something where they're from, just to give us a chance to have a little better idea of what the scope of our audience is. Right. Do we have any other questions from the telephone participants?
Okay, great. Now, this is your interactive part of the exercise here. On slide 14, I want you to take out a piece of paper, and I want you to recreate this incredibly complex table. And I want you to just start to fill these in, and you're going to populate it as we go through today. But take a couple minutes and just think of one driving force. And from that driving force, what would a goal be? This is going to help you out. I mean, theoretically, you all are listening because you want to get some advice. And if you do this exercise, hopefully it'll get you thinking here. You can do it in groups if you're all together. All right. Please keep your phone on mute during this part. So just take a couple minutes to come up with a driving force, a goal of your program, and maybe one or two objectives. Okay, and if you could put those phones on mute, that would be swell.
Charlie?
Yes.
One of our people asked, say it again now.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. You're breaking up. Oh, explain what to do?
Pre and post surveys are expensive, and it's not usually covered in grants.
Okay. When we get to that part as far as techniques, I'll definitely go over that. And that is a downside. We'll talk about that. But right now, if you could just take that worksheet on slide number 14, that would be great. Okay, so while you're doing that, I think you all, you know, that shouldn't take very long. We're going to move on to the next block. We just completed that first building block, and if you could put your phones on mute, that would be great. I hear a couple of you out there, heavy breathers. Okay, yep, there she was. So moving on to number 15, talking about the target audience. Okay. First of all, so we need to figure out, okay, here's our objectives, our goals and objectives. Who do we need to reach? Going to slide 16. These are two very different target audiences that we'll have to develop two very different messages for. Okay, I'll ask one more time. If you could put your phone on mute. Everyone just double check that your phone's on mute. Asterisk 6. Thanks so much. There we go. There we go. Exactly. All those slackers out there. So number 17, when we're talking about the target audience, it's very important to break down your audience so that when you go out with a message, it's going to be effective for that entire group. Therefore, you're going to have to segment your audience so that they will respond to that one particular message. There are lots of different ways you can break down an audience, and you're going to have several different audiences. You can break them down geographically, homeowners that live around the lake, socioeconomically, by gender. I know a lot of volunteer monitoring groups who try to target retired women or by age, retirees, ethnicity, occupation. We want to target lawn care companies. Lots of different ways you can break down your audience, but the important thing is that you must break them down. To go out with one message, it's just going to be so diluted to that audience. And moving on to number 18, you can see there's different groups of audiences, but even within these audiences, you've got to break it down further in order for it to truly be effective. Taking, for example, the third bullet, non-governmental organizations, NGOs, you can't just lump them into a category. They all have specific missions, and they have their own markets and target audiences. You've got it. Same with business and industry. We tend to, the last one in particular, homeowners. A lot of people I work with, they want to lump homeowners into a category. Well, that's going to be pretty ineffective. By and large, you've got to go back to what your objectives are and who you need to target amongst homeowners. For example, we go to number 19. I just broke homeowners out four different categories. We may want to target homeowners who have on-site septic systems. We may want to target homeowners between the age of 40 and 55. With lawns who do their own lawn care maintenance. Some of these, you know, may intersect. We may want to target homeowners who have children in the school system. So you need to break out your audience into the smallest unit possible in order to be effective. Now, once you have broken out that audience, what do? You move on to number 20. And there's information we need to get about the audience. I like to think of my target audience as my customer, and I need to know what my customer needs, what they value, what they care about, what their knowledge level is. All of this information is going to help me craft a message. So these are some of the types of information that you want to get. The demographic information, which is fairly easy to obtain, and we'll talk about how to get this information. The knowledge of the message, very basic. Do they know what a watershed is? I'm hearing someone there. If you could do *6 to mute your phone, please. Thank you. Most people do not, frankly, know what a watershed is. So you don't want to include that in your message without either defining it or you explaining it to people. Very important, communication channels. How do the members of the target audience both communicate with each other as well as receive information? Because this is obviously you're going to use this to help distribute your message. What do they subscribe to? Do they, you know, watch the news? What clubs are they members of? You need to know what makes them tick. And the final one, that are attitudes and perceptions. Very important, as everyone says, perception is reality. If they feel that water pollution is coming from factories, which unfortunately is still the predominant sentiment in America, then you've got to dispel that or refute it. Or who do they respect? What are their attitudes on if you're from a governmental organization? Are you on their radar screen? Do they know who the Department of Natural Resources are? Do they know what you do? Because if you're going out to deliver that message, do you have credibility, or maybe you need to think of someone else? So this is, in general, the kinds of information that I would want to collect on an audience. And I should have mentioned probably right up front, when Susan mentioned these two guides that we have done, and we have updated that original outreach guide, and they're in the resources section, most of this information is included. And so if you feel I'm going too fast or I'm not going into enough detail, please read that guide and it will be there. Now, this is kind of the fun part. How do you get this information about the audience? And moving on to number 21, you've got to do a little sleuthing, a little research. There are different ways depending on who the audience is, depending on your budget and resources available. Now, focus group, I have as the first one there. I like a focus group for several reasons. One, particularly for you folks, the Montana folks and the TMDL woman, focus groups I like to use when I'm involved in a long-term project because I can start building relationships with members of the target audience. It also allows me to see who the leader is in that audience. To give you an example, a couple weeks ago, I did a focus group as part of a larger watershed planning effort where they wanted to, the client, who is a county in Michigan, wanted to involve underrepresented groups. And one group was the builder and developer industry. Now, because they typically tend not to participate, they wait to see what the regulations are, and frankly, they've told me if I have to jump through three hoops, just tell me. So, anyway, we had a focus group with seven members of the community, and I could see right away who the respected member was, who they looked towards, and so this person is going to participate, and he's going to spread the message to his other constituents. So that's why I like to use focus groups. In terms of the cost of focus groups, a lot of colleges have social scientists as part of universities, and this also goes for doing surveys, that they can very cost-effectively help conduct a focus group or surveys for you. And that's where I would recommend for the woman who said, you know, they're very expensive to conduct. I know, for example, Michigan State University has a great social scientist group there. The other places to get information on your audience, if you don't have money to do your own surveys, there are a lot of national surveys that have been done that you can at least get a baseline on to see what nationally what attitudes are amongst different groups. Public agencies conduct a lot of surveys. Trade associations conduct research on their constituents in the building industry. And when I was working with the builders and developers in their focus groups, I was asking them, they were my customers. And a focus group, it's very important. You're not there to give information. You're there to receive it. And I was asking them, what messages should we use as this watershed planning group to increase the participation of builders and developers in this process? And it was very interesting what they said on, you know, how can we get them to the table? And I'll share that with you later when we're on the messages. But moving on to number 22, this is just an example of a public opinion survey that an organization did for the Schuylkill River of the citizens to support land conservation. And this is to show that most people would support land conservation efforts. And going to the next slide, 23, this is a national survey that is done by NEDF as part of the Roper poll. This is where nationally most people are. When you ask them, what is the most common cause of pollution of streams, rivers, and oceans? Okay? They think it's 45% says waste dumped by factories. So we have a lot of work to do. There is also a great resource that EPA conducted, asking, you know, public opinion on non-point source pollution, which you can imagine, was very challenging. Of course, no one knew what non-point source pollution was, and most people didn't even know what a watershed was. And this report is available in a resource that we'll be talking about later. But you can use these nationally to help you start targeting your own audience. Surveys, moving on to 24. Surveys are good. They can be expensive if you can, you know, get local support through either your conservation district, extension. Look to your county agencies. A lot of them have the expertise to do this. This was a survey we did in Tampa, and to me the disturbing statistic is not that only 19% knew they lived in a watershed, but rather 35% of the people said they did not live in a watershed. So, again, we have a lot of work to do there. This survey, in terms of cost, was for 400 households, and it was a random digit dial you can target by zip code, and it was $15,000. So the question you have to ask yourself is this, you know, money well spent? And then we did a follow-up post-survey later after this watershed campaign we did. Okay, moving, let's see, on to 25. Let's go ahead and pause here and take some questions, comments. Okay, let's first, Susan's going to read some of our online comments.
Amy from Connecticut, Charlie, was listening to the discussion about audience types, and she says she's a coordinator of a regional household hazardous waste program. Is there a difference in how you get the message to urban versus suburban audiences?
Let's see. To reach urban versus suburban audiences. I would think there would be. What's your objective? She can't answer, can she? She can't.
Really, apologize.
She cannot.
Unfortunately, I'm not in a very, I'm not able to help you, but, okay, here's the phone number. Can you take it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was listening to someone else. In terms of urban audiences, if your objective is to get them to take their household hazardous waste to a facility, they are going to have different barriers, I think.
5, 6.
To doing that as opposed to suburban audiences who may not be, who have a car. So that's where when we get into the messages, you first have to figure out how would they take their hazardous waste? Is there a pickup? Because frankly, people are willing to only do so much. If they have to haul something and they don't have a car, typically if they're urban dwellers, that could be a real challenge. Next.
Okay, Charlie, and I'd like to ask everyone again to put their phone on mute, particularly the person who is just giving out the phone number. Strad, who has several questions, and we have time to address one from South Carolina. How to reach key audiences, say landscape and construction workers, not just the enviro-conscious homeowners and the company officers, but say the landscape and construction workers. How can you reach them, Charlie?
Okay. Well, this is excellent, and this is where we were, you know, again, trying to reach the builders and developers.
Yeah.
And that's where
it
was very interesting because they were very mistrustful of this process, of this watershed planning process. When we asked for them to be involved, and this is going to be very relevant for those issues doing a TMDL and updating your plan, is the importance of involving them early on in the process and to assure them that you have no hidden agenda. And they wanted to see what the goals were for the plan. They said, well, show us what the goals are. And we said, we don't have them yet because we want you to help shape the goals. And it took quite a while before they realized that we were really being serious and that we asked them, what would you like to see? This is an opportunity for you to participate to get your goals and objectives in there. And they came up with quite a few goals. They wanted it, you know, it had to be economically feasible. And we said, okay, we can get that in there. So I think in terms of reaching contractors, lawn care companies, you try to involve them in a larger planning effort and take their goals and objectives into account.
All right, Charlie, let's see if we have time for a phone question. Would somebody on the telephone like to identify themselves and ask a question?
Any questions or comments on that last segment? Okay. Right now, okay, so we're on slide 25. If you can take out that worksheet that hopefully you had kind of filled in and identify one or two target audiences that you feel you would need to reach in order to meet your objective. And when you identify that target audience, also come up with one or two techniques for gathering information. Someone's having a lot of fun out there. Okay, so now if you all could again put your phones on mute, that's star six. We're going to move on to slide 26, and this is where we're going to really focus on how to craft that message, which is going to address a lot of people's issues. How do we involve these different audiences, get them to participate? How do we help achieve our objective? Okay, well, moving to slide 27, the message that you go out with should be, we mentioned, very specific to your target audience, and it should have a direct benefit to the audience. Remember I said that the audience is basically your customer. What are your customer's needs? How can you meet the needs of your customer? And some general benefit, and again, you really don't know what the benefit is until you've researched your audience, what they care about. But positive messages tend to work best, particularly for voluntary action. Now, moving to 28, this was a business card that was left on my windshield, which I didn't really appreciate. But we pay you to lose weight. 36 people need it. I don't know why 36, but who are serious. You can eat your favorite foods, all natural, doctor recommended, permanent weight loss. Now, what are the messages? The messages, eat your foods, no drugs, doctor recommended. What's the objective of this? Now, you all have to answer to yourselves because I know you're on mute. But hopefully everyone said, the objective is to call Melanie, right? It's very important that you separate your message from your objective. Your message helps to achieve your objective. But a lot of times people go out with their objective and they miss the mark completely. For example, if they go out, help improve water quality. No, that's not going to work. You need to go out with a message that will specifically target that audience. If you move to slide 29, I think this is predominantly for the Y chromosomes that are on the phone, but look at the messages here. More harvest. Faster, more power, more threshing area, bigger hopper, whatever that is. Now, these are all messages to help achieve the objective of what? Sell this combine. Okay? Very important. Your messages should directly appeal to your audience to kind of grab them in, which will help you achieve your objective. And this technique and these tools, moving on to number 30, are called social marketing. And social marketing tools are using some of the same principles that they use for commercial marketing and apply them to social issues, such as the environment, seatbelt use, smoking, etc., with the purpose of achieving a change in behavior. Very, very difficult to do. The process takes a long time. You have to stick with it. It does work. But how can you use these social marketing tools to change behaviors, voluntary behaviors? Well, moving on to number 31, taking a look at some popular social marketing campaigns. I think we're all familiar with the Buckle Up America, Smokey the Bear. The Truth campaign is very interesting. The Truth campaign, I don't know how many people are familiar with it, as a result of the tobacco settlement. And talk about a tough target audience. At-risk teenagers likely to smoke. What kind of messages would you come up with to target that group? You can't say don't do it, because that's exactly why they want to do it. You can't say you're going to die from it, because teenagers are immortal. Very challenging, and I don't know if anyone has seen these Truth Campaign ads, but the technique they're using is that basically, dog on the line. Basically, they're saying that if you smoke, you're being manipulated by the corporate culture. And do you really want that? So that's the message they're using. Now, I want you all to close your eyes and think of the most popular environmental campaign out there that you can remember. Okay, I'm not going to give you any more time. Moving on to 32. This was the first one. How many people remember? Yep, Iron Eyes Cody crying. This was interesting because it had an added dimension. This was the first time, I think, that people started connecting personal responsibility, that you can do something about it. People start pollution, people can stop it. It's not someone else's problem. So this was a social marketing tool. Now, one of the key features in social marketing, moving on to 33, is that there has to be an exchange for your customer. In order for them to do what you're asking, you have to give them something in return. And what the exchange is going to depend on the person, depend on the message. Okay? They can be these real benefits of saving time, saving money, improving health, or they can be perceived benefits. It's cool to do. People expect you to do it. You'll get a reward. These are these incentives. Now, anyone who has children knows that because it's the right thing to do doesn't mean people are going to do it. Brush your teeth. Why? Because, right, you have to incent. Do your chores. Huh. How about, no, you got to pay them. That's the exchange. Now, you have to give them something they want. If they don't want it, you don't have an audience. And a really good example of this, I was talking to a master gardener. I live in Warrenton, Virginia, and he had a workshop he was doing on eco-friendly practices around the home that you could do. Rain gardens, things like that, organics, fertilizer, stuff like that. And three people showed up to the workshop, and it was very sad and depressing for him. He changed the title of his workshop to How to Get Rid of Voles in Your Garden. And he talked about the exact same thing, but they were filled to capacity. So he was giving people what they wanted, get rid of your voles. At the same time, talking about eco-friendly practices. Now, moving on to 34, it's not good enough just to give them a benefit, an exchange for what you want them to do, or maybe what you don't want them to do. You have to figure out what are the barriers to getting them to adopting this behavior. Because it doesn't matter how great the product is, if there is some barrier, be it physical, psychological, economic barrier, you have to address that barrier first before you can move forward. Now, some example barriers, you know, the physical barrier, it's too hard to do. Or with this household hazardous waste recycling, I tried it once, but they wouldn't take, you know, my thing. So it was kind of embarrassing. Or, I'm willing to recycle my oil, but it's got to be convenient. as opposed to, or there could be economic barriers. You know, it's too expensive for me to adopt these different practices. Moving to 35, the lack of knowledge. I know for a lot of the volunteer monitoring programs, recruiting new partners, people are nervous. I'm not trained in the science. I don't know how to do it. As well as these social psychological barriers. You know, it's against the norm. Other people aren't doing it. I don't want to, you know, be out there. I tried it once and it didn't work. All common barriers, but again, you have to go back to your audience and ask, have you considered this? Oh yeah, I tried it once and it was horrible and I'm not doing it again. Or I know we were working down in Florida, Melissa DeSantis, with Tetra Tech and trying to recruit people for volunteer monitoring. And they said, yeah, I tried it, but I never saw my data being used, and so I dropped out. So that was a barrier. Moving to 36, here is the Ag Council did a campaign called Get Green, where they saw the barriers were that people were willing to help the environment, but they didn't know how to, and they were afraid it would take too much time or money. So basically, their messages were, here are some quick things that you can do to help the environment and save money. The Get Green, you know, applies to both. So that the tips, they were easy, make them feel good, positive impact, and they would save money. So all messages to help get the word out. And moving on to 37, you can see the formats they use, TV, radio, PSAs, and their messages, save money and the environment. The save money is first. Now I want to talk about some specific tools on 38 for changing behavior. And the four, and again, we go into more detail in the outreach guide on this, but four things I want to talk about. Social norms, commitment, prompt, and incentive. Now, moving to 39, most people want to be perceived as normal, unless, you know, sort of you're a scary teenager, but then you're still conforming to that nonconformist role. So they don't want to be out of bounds with their friends. So what we need to do is to show them that truly everyone else is doing this, conserving water. Everyone else is, so that you're the only one who isn't doing this. I don't know if people see the seatbelt signage that says 85% of seatbelt use last week. Saying, are you part of the 15% that is not doing this? So you want to show people that they are part of the larger group. For example, on slide 40, using statistics, 80% of Michigan State University students use a designated driver. Do you? And really? Oh my gosh, I had no idea. I thought only the, you know, real nerds were designated drivers. So by showing statistics that 90% of our community is recycling, you know, you don't want to be in that 10%. Moving to 41, showing other social norm techniques, eco-labeling, the recycling bins at the curb, they're everywhere. Everyone is expected to do it. Showing demonstration projects and fields. You know, Bob Jones down the road, he's doing a demonstration site. Oh, well, Bob's kind of cool, so maybe I should do it. That social acceptance. Moving to 42, here's just an example of some of these demonstration sites. You get a couple people to buy in and others follow. And we call those people who buy in early the early adopters. You want to kind of target them first, get them on board. You get some developer who is proactive, willing to adopt some of these low-impact development practices. Others will follow. Moving on to 43, the commitment. Great way to kind of kick off a program by getting a pledge, either verbally or written. And research has shown that if people give either a verbal or a written commitment, they are much more likely to follow through. So, and written is even stronger than verbal. We developed this pledge on a website as part of a watershed program. Take this pledge that you're going to help, you know, restore and protect this environment. Moving to 43, prompts. Very important reminders. In order to get things to become a habit, some people need lots of reminders. The storm drain stenciling is a reminder. Don't dump. And you do it at what they call the point of fail, where the activity is taking place. You're not going to have, you know, pick up your pet waste signs in the grocery store. You put them on the bike trails, the walking paths. How about when we talk about seatbelt use, the prompt, what makes you put your seatbelt on when you get in the car? Could be if you have an annoying child reminding you, which is good, but we all don't. How about that little ding? Ding, 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 ding. Oh, okay. A very key prompt and reminder at the point of sale. Put that seatbelt on. Then there's some negative reinforcement messages with seatbelts. Click it or tick it. Okay. That's a reminder. Now, moving on to 45. This is for that woman in California for water conservation. Incentive. And this is where not everyone needs an incentive to do the right thing, but oftentimes it helps to get people to start. And incentives in terms of money, but also recognition. If you see people doing the right thing, reward them for that. At the same time, if they're not doing the right thing, you can, you know, punish them. Now, in terms of people doing the right thing, I'm talking about journalists. If they report a story well, call them up and say, you did a great job. People, you were talking about landscapers and construction practices. If you get someone doing the right thing, promote it, because there's very much that Me Too mentality out there. I want an award, too. So moving on to 46, this example in the city of Albuquerque, not enough water, and they wanted to promote water conservation through incentives as opposed to user fees and taxes. So they gave rebates. If you did the drought-tolerant landscaping, xeriscaping, installed low-flow toilets, low-flow washing machines, they would provide them for you, give them rebates. Moving on to 47, over 2 years, this program in the city of Albuquerque saved 88 billion gallons. Humongous savings. And this is on their website, the city of Albuquerque. I encourage you to take a look at it. Very successful, all through incentives as opposed to the negative approach. Now, moving on to 48, in general, when you start developing your messages, it, of course, is going to depend on your audience, but I just use this as an overall guide, the three H's. Remember, health, home, and heritage. Nationally, these are what people tend to care about. If you can link your message with that it's going to improve drinking water by restoring or protecting this wetland, you're going to have a lot better chance of succeeding than saying it's going to improve water quality. People are very drinking water is the number one issue people care about. Their children's health is number two. They obviously, you know, property values. Again, it depends on the audience, but these are messages that will resonate over water quality. Now, moving on to 49, I just want to give you some quick examples here. This is where positive messages tend to work better than negative messages. If you're at a conference and you're walking by this brochure, you may need an Army permit to work on your own land. Chances are you're going to pretend you didn't see that and just walk on by. Number 50, humor, I think, works very well. Got grass, mow high. Now, if you read this, it does not mention once that this is important to water quality. This is going to make your lawn easier and cheaper to maintain. Wow, that sounds great. I don't want to have to keep mowing in the summer. And if you read the bold print at the bottom, mow high. Save time and money. It's that easy. Now, moving to 51, you have to keep in mind, again, who your audience is and what kind of message you need to be careful if you want something provocative or not. This was a brochure we did for low-income populations, and we specifically called it, Should I Eat the Fish I Catch? A lot of these people, the only source of protein they would get would be from fish. So we did not want to go out with the message, don't eat the fish. But here's a guide to healthy eating of the fish. Now, originally, the title was, if you go to number 52, it was called The Risk Assessment Guide to the Consumption of Chemically Contaminated Fish. Catchy, but we thought that maybe something simpler for those populations out there would work. And this has also been translated, I think, in now into 7 different languages. It's been really successful. Number 53 is, this is sort of more provocative. Is your drinking water safe? That is probably going to get someone to read it. People are very concerned about their drinking water. So depending on the response you're looking for, what kind of message you go out with. Now moving on to 54, sometimes, you know, something to catch their attention, you want to have a little substance behind it. Okay, moving on to 55. This, I have 2 examples here of billboards which are trying to achieve the same objective of contamination, basically, of your drinking supply through fecal coliforms and E. coli. The first one, please do not feed the geese. Protect your river and drinking water. To me, you kind of have to go through a lot of steps to make that connection that I shouldn't feed the geese because then they're going to poop and then it goes in my drinking water. Whereas if you go to slide 56, this was done by TNRCC, now Texas CEQ, it's pretty clear, the connection. If you think picking up dog poop is unpleasant, try drinking it. Pretty clear. So you need, especially if you have a billboard or something and you have about 10 seconds for someone to get that message, think about it. Moving on to 57, if your message is longer, more involved, you want to talk about the problems and the solutions, I would recommend always include these 3 things with it. You know, what's the problem, why should you care, and here's what you should do about it. I like to pair the problem and the solution together. Moving on to 58, you want to recognize 2 to match. Your message should be in a language that your audience understands. And not just English or Spanish, but also the reading level, the tone, and the kind of vernacular. For example, number 59, you know, instead of talking about increased phosphorus loadings in the lake, what does that mean? Well, it means scum. It's that green junk of, oh, yeah, ooh, that's bad. I don't want that. Oh, okay, I shouldn't fertilize. I should not mow to the edge, stuff like that. Think of the language of your audience. Now, I want to open the phone lines up now to ask questions. Ask you all, how can you ensure that your target audience is going to respond to the message you developed? Any thoughts out there?
Yeah. This is a debate we've been having for the last month about how do we find out how effective we are and how do we measure that.
Right.
And there's no consensus here. We don't seem to agree that there is any way to do this.
Well, how did you develop your messages? Who developed the messages?
Now you put me on the spot.
Sorry about that.
I did some of them.
Uh-oh.
And they've been fairly effective. And we.
How do you know?
Well, I think by demand more than anything else.
Okay.
But as far as action, somebody would pick up a brochure that dealt with just wetlands information in general, and then I might get a phone call from a citizen or a group.
Uh-huh.
And then I would go there and talk or whatever might work.
What is your objective?
Well, I think the big objective is to make them aware of the function and values of wetlands.
Of wetlands, okay. So that, and how do you, we're sort of jumping ahead, but how do you distribute that information?
Well, several ways. One, by demand, somebody will, I get a number of letters and I get something from our, what's the outfit in Cincinnati?
NSEPI?
Yeah, NSEPI. I get a number of those. And I get them from all over the world, by the way.
Wow. Well, there you go.
I just sent some to India.
Great.
And then I just got a phone call from Brookings, South Dakota this morning. A fellow teaches a class on vocational education in one of the schools. I don't know what school.
Well, that, I mean, you do have one tracking mechanism right there where who is requesting this information,
yeah,
and you can find out from them, how did you find out about it? So that answers one question, that your information is getting out there. Now, the second question is, are people acting on it, and what are they supposed to do with that information?
Yeah, and that's one of the burning questions that we would like to answer, and we're trying to figure out a way to come up with something that would give us a handle on how effective this is.
And maybe the if you want people to become more aware of the functional values of wetlands and therefore in doing community master plans or ordinances that wetlands are incorporated, things like that might be a way.
Yeah.
But in order for you really to know if your messages are effective and that people are responding the way that they're intended, frankly, you have to ask your target audience. And this is where it's so interesting. We tend not to do that.
That's right.
We develop the messages in, you know, our own offices thinking we know what they want. And I just want to share with you, when I met with those developers and I said, you know, what messages should we use to get you guys involved? And he said, or they said, one, you have to show us how this plan affects us economically. You have to say that if they don't participate, there's going to be time and money impacts, right? So they know the messages. And they said fear. And they said you should say that if you should participate in this process because it's going to impact your business, and so you should have a say in what's going on. But we didn't make those up. We asked the target audience, and that's the best way to do it. Any other questions or comments on the messages? No? Okay, great. So we're going to move on here to number 60, where I want you to start coming up with some messages that, based on your fictional research of your target audience that you did in the last 4 minutes, what messages do you think are going to resonate with your audience? And remember, your message is not your objective. Now, for example, for functional values of wetlands, our message might be increase birdwatching habitat or help filter your drinking water, something like that.
Charlie, Paul McIver again.
Hey there.
We have done that, and it has had some positive feedback. But this screen that you're showing on 59,
yes,
B equals scum,
right.
I really like that. But if you were to use that, how much explanation would you have explaining what P means?
Well, no, and I'm not using this as sort of a format. I'm just using, like, that I would say maybe instead of phosphorus, use scum.
Just use scum.
Right, depending on your audience. Scum is good. People know scum is gross. They don't want scum.
Okay.
So moving on here. For number 60, if you can come up with some messages, and we're going to mute you again. Some messages that you think are going to hit your audience. Again, it's not your objective, but it's going to help achieve your objective. And while you're doing that, we're going to move on to format number 61. This is typically where most people want to start. I come into a meeting with a client and they say, we want a fact sheet. We want a brochure. And you can see we've just spent the past hour and 15 minutes gathering information and researching to determine, is a fact sheet what we need? And we typically say no. Homeowners do not read fact sheets. I'm a homeowner. I'm not going to read a fact sheet. So we need to develop formats to put our messages into them that our audience will respond to. And moving to 62, there's a lot of formats out there, a lot of stuff. It's overwhelming. And the formats we use are going to depend on how long our message is. Obviously, the billboard versus, you know, a magazine article. But don't despair. Help is on the way. Moving on to number 63, I'd like to introduce our guest here in the studio audience, Melissa DeSantis with Tetra Tech. And you do not have to reinvent the wheel. There is so much stuff out there that's available, and Melissa's going to tell you how you can get it.
Okay. One of the things that EPA has been working on developing lately is a non-point source outreach digital toolbox. And this is going to be a CD that's going to be available, we're hoping, in September. And it's going to have a lot of the materials that you've seen on some of Charlie's slides today. What it's focusing on is TV, radio, and print ads. Most of the print ads are what you've seen in Charlie's slides. But those ads are focusing on non-point source and stormwater pollution. And it also includes on this CD toolbox some surveys and reports and other evaluation reports and mechanisms that people have used in real projects that you can use. Someone had a question online about how things being expensive as far as doing surveys and focus groups. Well, you don't have to go out and do your own. There are many surveys and reports. The actual survey mechanism, the questions and the answers and their analysis is on the CD. So Don Way at EPA headquarters here in D.C., his contact information is on the slide, and he can direct you if you have any other questions about the toolbox. But please be aware that it's coming out soon, and it's going to have more than 700 products on the CD, many of which you can use in your campaigns, and we've included information on permission levels. So a lot of the folks that we've contacted, like that pet poop billboard that Charlie showed with the little Shar Pei puppy, they've given permission for anybody to use that if you just simply contact them and let them know that you can use that. So that's going to be included in the toolbox as well.
Terrific. And that's going to be a great resource. And how great is it? Don Way said, go ahead, put my phone number up there, call him. So I want everyone to call him after this webcast. He's expecting your call. You'll hurt his feelings if you don't call. Okay, that's going to be a great resource because there is so much great copyright-free stuff out there that you can spend your time researching up front as opposed to developing these formats. So we're just going to breeze through a couple of these example formats here, 64, to show, yeah, a brochure and a fact sheet can be useful, but maybe we can do something a little more creative. You know, the magnets, depending on the message, those refrigerator magnets, 2 by 3 inches business card format, 23 cents each, they're in front of your audience all day long on the refrigerator. 65, if you've got a watershed group or an organization that you're working with ongoing, having your own newsletter can be helpful, particularly if you're moving through a process. This we did as part of a watershed plan for Rockdale County. And on the left side, we showed with our little school bus where we were in the process. And that helps for getting those stakeholders, keeping them informed. Sometimes they're not going to come to the table at the beginning, but this way you send them the information, you keep them informed, so hopefully when they do choose to participate, they're already aware of the issues. Moving on to 66, this was an example where they asked us to do a fact sheet, and I just couldn't do one more fact sheet. So we decided to do, and it was for homeowners, we decided to do a calendar. And for each month, we had seasonal tips, as well as we wove stewardship stories throughout. And we also had, they wanted nice photos. So we had a photo contest. People could send in their photos, and it was very successful. The one thing, caution about calendars is, as you know, timeliness is everything, and you've got to get your distribution system set up well ahead of time, in, I would say, October, November, when people are starting to get their Sarah Club, Ansel Adams calendars out. Another format, 67, videos, very popular. They can be very expensive and very difficult to do right, I must say. And so if you can contract with someone, some organization, some university, some of these universities are very sophisticated in terms of their expertise. Number 68, I mentioned the award. It's also a format. It's very easy to do, to come up with your annual award. And you get, there's lots of bang for your buck on these awards. One, you can leverage with different kinds of audiences, but also you can get media coverage for the award. You can involve local officials who want to pose with the recipient. It's a great way that if you see people doing the right thing, reward them. Also, contests. I know Don Way just sent me, there's an art contest for painting rain barrels. And you can vote on your own. This is from the Kentucky program, the Pride program. Contest. People love contests and, you know, kind of making it fun. Number 69, we saw here is another billboard. You've got to be careful with billboards for several reasons. One, you'll get letters from Scenic America. And I you know, I'm not passing judgment one way or the other, but you have to be aware of that. Also, you know, what kind of message can you glean as you're driving, you know, down the highway at 50 miles an hour? And how do you evaluate this? Was this successful or no? Since Illinois EPA did this one, they've added, they added another one where there was some contact information for follow-up. But that's, again, also difficult to write down a phone number. But I just want to give you kind of some examples. Going on to number 70. Quizzes and games, if you can try to make it interactive, involve people. We're in the Jeopardy era. People like to test their knowledge. Make it fun. And these are also, I think, in the outreach toolbox, some of them. 71, I know this definitely is. Take the Stormwater Challenge. This we've been able to really get multiple uses out of. It started as a big foam core mounted game where people at fairs could come around with dry erase markers and fill it in. Then we made it a web-based clickable game, and now people have made it into placemats, and they put their own logos on it. So you can recycle these things over and over. Number 72, fairs. A great way. Again, you get people involved in the community, and you can, you know, educate them on different issues. This, if people are interested, and this was Passport to Your Watershed, something we did, Melissa and I did down in Rockdale County, Georgia, and we had 13 stations, and people were given passport booklets when they entered, and they had to go to each station, do something, like make a non-toxic cleanser, find their watershed address, stuff like that, and then they got a stamp in their booklet. If people are interested, we've got everything written out for the materials, the stations, the graphics. Just email me. My email address is at the beginning there. And that was an example where we got some great media coverage on it, and they received a grant. They received an award for it. Moving on, another key important, it's both a format and a distribution mechanism on slide 73, are the media. Particularly when you're at the beginning of your program and you're in that broad awareness phase, you have got to use the media. Why? Because moving on to 74, if you see where people get their information on water issues, if you're not in that top 92% local TV news, newspapers, or news programs, people aren't hearing your message. Now, a lot of people get scared by the media. They think that, you know, they're an enigma, the whole journalism. But basically, the media is just another target audience. And what we do not do is ask them and talk to them about what they want. They're just another customer. And so for number 75, the very first bullet for tips for working with reporters is call them and establish a relationship with them before you need them. And simply ask them, how do they like to receive their information? By fax, email, attached, embedded in the email? When is their deadline? What kind of stories are they looking for? Do they want photos? Frankly, if you are at a community newspaper, a weekly newspaper, I know this from experience and being married to someone who was at one, if you write the story and have photos, it'll get in there. They don't have time to go out and research their stories. So I can almost guarantee you it'll get in there. But you need to take them out in your watershed. They love to get out of the office. Take them to show them what you're concerned about and educate them. They're not necessarily an educated audience, but the media is a very powerful medium that can really help you get the message out. Moving on to 76, another sort of similar media format is the public access channel. We've used them several times during watershed fairs. They come out, they will film anything. They will edit it down and show it over and over and over. This is also true for Board of Supervisor meetings, which I would encourage you to make a presentation, because I had no idea that those are televised, and I'd have people come up to me, oh, Charlie, I saw you in the, you know, so that's another conduit to get your information out. Number 77, whatever format you choose, what I would encourage you to do is to put who the audience, the intended audience is on the front cover to encourage them to pick it up, because if they're walking by table and there's all this stuff on there, they may not, you know, local tools for lasting change, but they say, well, I'm a decision maker, well, so maybe I should read it. Put who the audience is on the cover whenever possible. Another important format that is critical today, websites. And I would imagine most people have websites. Even if you just have a basic one, you really should have a website where people can go and get some basic information on your program. The thing you need to keep in mind is that you need to bring your audience to your website. So how are you going to advertise that? How are you going to let them know it's there? Number 79, here's just an example. Very clean, simple website. It doesn't have to be fancy and with Flash and Macromedia and all that stuff. Okay, so we've got our format, but moving on to 80, how are we going to distribute them? And this again, you need to think about this before you develop your format, because you've developed this fabulous poster, and then you find out it's going to cost you $6 each to mail them. Oh, maybe we shouldn't do a poster. Or you've got this great calendar, but you don't know how you're going to get it. Or you've got this septic system magnet. How are we going to get the people, you know, you need to figure out your distribution mechanism. You also need to figure out who is going to distribute the message. And this goes back to the research we did on the target audience, where we find out who's going to be the most credible messenger. Who are they going to listen to for the message? It may be you in your organization, but it may not. And you have to recognize that. For slide 81, in a perfect world, this is what I'm aspiring to, is that instead of, you know, you're sitting there having your Cheerios, and instead of staring at the orange juice carton with the Mayo Clinic, 8 ways to reduce stress, you're staring at 10 things you can do to keep your lake healthy. This is sort of, I think, where we need to get to. And if anyone wants to partner with Minute Maid, I'd be happy to help. Similarly, 82, you know, walking down the street in between the new Diet Coke with lime and the Tasani water, we got what you can do. We need to get our message out into the broader arena, instead of just in these environmental brochures that people pick up at conferences. in delivering the message, one of the easiest things that you can do and the most successful is to piggyback your message onto something that your target audience already reads. Developing and producing your own newsletter is costly with the mailing list, and you're not, how are you going to know that your audience is going to read that? How are you going to get that into your audience's hands? Piggyback, they probably have their own, the crop report they read or something that they're familiar with. You've already asked them how they communicate with each other, so try piggybacking your message. Some examples sort of distributing this I like on 84, Delaware did a here's the audience right on the front, a report to the people of the first state. And this was basically a summary of their annual report, and they did it as a newspaper insert. And we've done a lot of newspaper inserts. It's a great way to target, because you can target zip code by zip code. It's very cost effective to do, and, it gets into people's Sunday paper. 85, you can go door to door. Who's going to distribute this message for stormwater pollution? Now, typically if you got someone coming up to your door, I would encourage you want a target audience of maybe a, Boy Scout, Girl Scout, someone friendly, non-intimidating, as your messenger. 86, here's a messenger. This is the border guard between Russia and Latvia. He was actually very sweet. EPA went over and did some watershed training over in Russia, and he wanted his picture taken with everyone. But the messenger is going to depend on your audience. For 87, for example, we've got three different audiences here. My target audiences are on the left. On the middle, we've got our scientists, and of course on our right, we have our elected officials. All respond differently. I think the key to delivering the message, or one of the most effective ways, is on 88, where you want a member of the target audience talking to another member of the target audience. They're going to be the most credible. You want a farmer talking to a farmer. I think if you can achieve that, you're going to really increase your chances of success. Uh-oh. Now, if we move to 89, my PowerPoint poisoning slide has come up. Mayday, mayday. And we're going to now take a little break here. Now we're going to turn the phone on again, and basically up to this point, any questions on that last segment with messages and formats, particularly what people have found to be very effective for them? Susan?
Charlie, one of the online participants wanted to know if you need to be a part of EPA to have access or use the new digital toolbox.
Not at all. No, it's going to be available to everyone on CD.
Charlie, Region 6 has a question. How do you secure media coverage of a contest award winner ceremony while at the same time avoiding to call attention to the fact that there was much lower participation than expected?
That's a good question. Well, let's see. You don't think they would just focus on the positive?
What if they don't?
Well, I tend to think that certainly if it's an award, is it who's giving the award?
City. A municipality.
And what was this contest for?
Zero skating.
Okay, this is for to give an award to someone who did. Well, what you could do is you could write the story. Was this media coverage in print or television?
What if they asked, how much did you have participate? How many did you have participate?
Well, I think it's very good to be prepared for that, and you can either talk about percentages or why, this was our first contest, and while maybe we didn't receive the numbers we expected, we're excited about repeating this next year.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions, comments on formats? Have people had sort of success with the media using them? I can't. No, okay. Also, I have, let's move to number 90, where now that you've developed your messages, if you could fill in, based on the messages you've crafted, what formats you think would be most appropriate for your audience, and how are you going to distribute those formats? Okay, so if you could put your phones back on mute, *6, that would be great. And now we're going to go to the last block in the Lego model, slide 91, evaluation. And this is where I know folks from Montana and some others are saying, how can you measure these results? And that's why it's so key to develop the evaluation component while you're developing the rest of your strategy. And basically, moving on to slide 92, evaluation is just asking questions. But it's very important to ask the right questions. And typically, we may ask how many people came to a workshop, and that gives us a number. But really, what does that number tell us about behavior change or our ultimate goal? Not a lot. So we need to make sure we're asking the right questions. Now, moving on to slide 93, at what point do you evaluate your program? Now, I know you're all nodding and answering to yourself, but at the very beginning, you need to start developing your evaluation component. The beginning of your program, during your program, and after your program. And after your program is to determine the impact. During your program, you want to know, are you implementing the tasks that you said you were going to be implementing? Are we on track with our work plan, our budget? Do we have the materials to implement what we said we were going to? Now, to show you an example of why it is so important to evaluate, moving on to 94, here's the Got Milk campaign. Now, raise your hands. How many of you have heard of the Got Milk campaign? Everyone in this room, so I'm assuming everyone out there in TV land has too. Very popular campaign. Now, would you say this campaign was successful? I would, because everyone's heard of it, right? Well, what's the objective of the campaign? Oh, I heard someone say, sell more milk. Exactly. Sell more milk. So they wanted to evaluate, did we sell more milk? You go to 95, and you look at the consumption of milk, which is the green line, which is very flat. It even went down a little compared to awareness, you know, shot through the roof. And this is where knowledge is not enough. It doesn't matter that everyone knows about the Got Milk campaign if they don't go out and buy milk. So what they had to do is retool their program, and basically what they discovered is there were not the opportunities, the point of sale, purchase points, to get milk. You know, you can go down the hall and get a soda, but if you wanted a milk, you couldn't go into the milk machine. And so they've, and since then, revamped. They put the milk in those cool little bottles, and you can buy them like you do at soda machines. Now, in slide 96, this is that follow-up survey we did in Tampa to see the change in awareness that 30% of people said they did live in a watershed compared to 19 before, which was a 58% increase. Now, I like to ask people, why don't you evaluate your program? Why do people typically not? And I hear lots of different answers, and I'd be very curious when I open the phones to hear from you. But typically, if you go to slide 98, there are three reasons why people don't evaluate. One, they ran out of money, their project's over, they're done. They didn't set aside money to evaluate. Two, they ran out of energy, it's hard to evaluate. But I think most importantly, number three, people don't want to hear criticism. Because if you evaluate, you're opening yourselves up for to find out what didn't work and why. People are too thin-skinned. And I think that's something we kind of have to get over, that by evaluating, yes, you are taking a, you know, a critical look at your program, but it's going to benefit you in the long run. And as an example here, for number 99, and I apologize for the fuzziness, this was a download on a website. This is a placemat for the Antietam Watershed Association. And they distributed it to local restaurants, and they wanted to know, is this placemat effective? And so if you go to slide 100, and they assess the short-term impact of these placemats based on what the goals, and they found that actually they needed to do a lot to improve it, that there was no hook. They needed something to engage, to involve the readers in the placemat, and they needed to provide action solutions, what people could do. But I give them a huge amount of credit for evaluating this placement, so they're going to go back, revamp it, incorporate these changes. So it's all about asking the right questions. Now, you would use the same techniques to evaluate your program as you would when we talked earlier about researching your target audience in terms of surveys, either pre and post, focus groups, follow-up focus groups. And I think that's where, for example, on slide 101, the Comfort Inn is asking themselves, well, how come we are not getting any customers? Someone laughed. See, it's very important to ask those questions. Now, I want to open up the phone lines again. This is the last block on slide 102. For your evaluation, I want you to fill in how are you going to evaluate this program. What you have here is a whole capsule summary of your outreach program.
Charlie?
Yeah.
Is that last sign of, you know, state prison under the lodging that you just showed?
Yes.
I have a picture we just took up in Canada of a bait fishing and tackle shop and a restaurant that said eat here and get worms.
You have to send that to me.
I will.
Can you do that? Thank you very much.
Speaking out everything else.
The restaurant may want to ask those same questions.
Then after you like
excellent.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, now is anyone brave enough to share with us, the whole group, their worksheet that they filled in? Those gigglers out there. No? Did anyone actually do it? You're on the honor system, you know.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Well, let me show you one example first, and then maybe that will... See, I need an incentive. I need to give a cash award for someone who will volunteer, although I'm not allowed to under the contract. If you look at slide 103, this is a Mill Creek watershed in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It was a Section 319 non-point source project where the driving forces were degraded water quality because the livestock are in the stream. And so they're not meeting water quality standards. Very kind of common problem in ag areas. So their goal, based on that driving force, was to restore water quality. Okay, well, how are they going to do that? So the goal is the overall environmental goal. Their objectives were to educate farmers about the benefits of fencing so that 20% of the stream miles would be fenced by 98. So we have a percentage measurable result, and we have a time frame. Very tough target audience, 1,000 Amish farmers. They're resistant to change, as is, you know, many audiences. And so the messages they went out with was that fencing is going to improve the health of your cows. You're not going to get those parasites that go in through the hoof. There is money available to help with the fencing, another incentive, and it's also going to create habitat for deer. They're big hunters, and the Amish women are big into pressing wildflowers, and so it's going to create wildflowers, a habitat. Different, a lot of different formats. They did have demonstration projects, one-on-one, which was the primary way. They did do some media coverage, videos. One of the primary formats they used is the Amish go to church every 2 weeks, and they're there for a long time, so they would always make sure they had something to talk about at those gatherings. And I think, very curiously, if you look under distribution, who did they have distribute the message? They're talking about herd health. Well, who's going to be the most credible? The veterinarian. So they had the veterinarians distribute the message, not necessarily NRCS folks. And then they did the evaluation. They did both, you know, number of miles stream bank fence, which was their goal, but also number of farmers contacted, number of farmers who called him back to ask for more information and water quality measurements. So this gives you just a little synopsis of when you're starting with your group to take, you know, a couple hours to kind of start jotting this stuff down and identifying the kind of information you need. Okay. Does anyone want to volunteer now?
No.
I could call on you. Oh, good. Do we have someone? Hello? Did they back out? No? Okay. I'm going to have to get my sheet out and call on someone. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So basically, to pull it all together on slide 104, you have to answer these questions. Why do you need to do outreach? Who do you need to target and why? What messages are they going to respond to? What format are they going to respond to? How are you going to distribute the format? And then how are you going to measure progress and success? If you can answer those questions, you're well on your way. Now, the other missing pieces in terms of an outreach strategy are on 105. You need to kind of have your to-do list, assign responsibilities, assign costs to do your task, and develop timelines to accomplish it. And then basically, once you've done that, on slide 106, you have to do it all over again. You're never done with outreach, and that's actually good news because that's job security for everyone. But once there's always another issue that you're constantly moving through awareness, education, and action. Okay? So that's all the slides, but I want to, are the phone lines open? Oh, we've got some, the last few minutes that we have, I'd like to take comments and any questions from folks.
Charlie, we have a question now. I think it might be related to your play and having, sort of trying different things.
Right.
Catherine in Georgia wants to know if mascots are effective in building awareness programs. And if so, what is the most effective way to develop a mascot?
Well, absolutely mascots are effective, and Melissa developed the Shelley the Turtle mascot for the Brooker Creek program in Florida, and one of the most effective ways, I think, is to make it a contest in developing the mascot, because that, you get the media coverage, again, school contest, so you get the awareness in the schools, but to have a mascot sort of pin something on the effort, which I think is very useful. And you can also use someone else's mascot and give them credit. And do we have mascots in the toolbox?
Yes.
And there are mascots in the outreach toolbox, so you can use those to get some ideas.
I also wanted to mention, Charlie, that Tom wrote in from California that he developed a baseline public opinion survey with 30 questions that he sent to 210 households. He used the GIS mapping software to randomly pick parcels within his permit area and included a business reply envelope for the respondents to mail back their surveys. He had a 50% response rate, and his total cost for his project were $400, not including his assessment.
Excellent.
But he just wanted to mention that a survey doesn't necessarily have
to cost a fortune.
So for 200 households?
Yeah, 210 households. He sent 30 questions, 50 of the business reply envelope, and he had a 50% response rate. So I think it's very high.
That's very high. Usually, if you can get 10%, you're doing pretty well. Excellent. Are there any questions on the phone?
Yeah, Charlie. This is Region EPA Region 9.
Hi there.
For those cases like Tampa, for example, where public awareness did increase, have you determined which methods of getting the message out were most cost-effective? How did people get the information?
Do you want to answer that, Melissa? Melissa's here, and she actually did the program, so let's have her answer.
Yeah, I can answer that. One of the things that was pretty effective in Florida was they did some radio public service announcements, but they also conducted what they called targeted parking lot events. They would set up camp outside of the Walmart or the Target stores, and they had a lot of giveaways and games and things, and people came over just to see what's this all about, and they learned a lot about watershed issues that way. And it was just average, everyday folks who might not have been interested in environmental issues otherwise that are just there to shop. So that, I know that's one way that they were able to reach a lot of folks.
Great, thanks.
Hi, this is EPA Region 6. Just to add on to what I just heard, I found that at public events, a big, big spinning wheel will draw people from as far away as they can see it. They'll go for that spinning wheel if you can get that there. But again, the Jeopardy 8, they love
that's
that.
That's excellent. They don't. You don't put someone on the spinning wheel, do you?
No.
an EPA employee.
I do have a question, and it goes back a little bit to the start of the presentation, and it was about your builders and developers. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to catch these guys. Did you have to buy a magazine subscription list, or how did you actually get a list of these people? I found them very hard to find.
We went through the county public works department, where the developers have to work with them to get their permits. And we did ask them, we had 7 people come, which is kind of what I like to shoot for, and we asked them, why did you come today? And someone said, their answers were, my engineer asked me to attend because I want to know what's going on that's going to impact my business. And one was the Department of Public Works director asked me to attend, so my input. So if you can get some of that pressure of where their permits come from, and we also had, you know, coffee and, you know, Danish, and we did it at a time that was convenient to them. We had to reschedule around a lot of folks, and so that's an important consideration.
Thank you.
Okay, a couple folks have asked me if they can use my slides. I always go back and forth, you know, imitation's a serious form of flattery, so sure, you know, if we're all out there to spread the, you know, do a better job. Sure, go ahead.
Hi, well, this is the moderator, Susan Fagan. I'd like to really thank Charlie for her participation today and Melissa and Don. And the very last slide has a link to the resources section, and I'd like to take everyone's attention just for a second to the resources because several of the online questions have been specifically about the resources. There is a link, if you go to the resources page, to the Getting in Step guide, which has a lot of the exact material that we covered today and some of it in more detail. There's a link to the Getting in Step Watershed Academy web module. There's a link to some other outreach and training opportunities, some non-point source and stormwater outreach materials. And I'd like to take just a moment today to announce our new watershed discussion forum. In response to a request from some of our stakeholders, EPA has put together a discussion forum, a message board, where you can post discussions and you can, for example, continue maybe some of the discussion and share some of the things that came up today on this watershed discussion forum. And if you click on that blue link or you visit it later on, it'll bring you up to the watershed discussion forum page, which is at www.epa.gov/owow/watershed/forum/forum.html, which I know is not the shortest URL, but it's there on the website if you'd like to come take a look at it later on. And this forum is just a place where we're trying to offer people a chance to exchange ideas and to have some peer-to-peer learning. So I'm hoping that some of you folks might be interested in continuing the type of discussion that we had today. And once again, I'd like to thank Charlie McPherson, Melissa DeSantos, and Don Way for their participation today. And we may have planned to have additional webcasts in the future. If you check back at the EPA website and some of the listservs, you'll be able to see that. Thank you very much for your participation
today.
Hello?
This is Region 6. I was wondering if it's possible to get a transcript of today's.
After the whole webcast is over, the entire audio file will be posted. Usually it's within 24 hours.
Okay, great.
And we do actually, we found that the transcript, the quality of the transcripts is pretty hard because someone is listening and just typing. But you can actually replay the entire audio file through your Windows Media Player, whichever kind of media player you have.
And because we have a large group here, it was just one line, will the people who were in this room be able to access the website and get that also?
Absolutely. Everybody, the website will be up forever, and anyone who wants to can go to the website. They'll be able to look at all the slides. They'll actually be able to play the whole audio cast again. The only thing they won't be able to do will be to ask Charlie questions live. But it's possible.
But you can email me.
Charlie's email is on the front page, and it's also possible that some of these types of discussions might be available on the new the forum discussion website. At clubin.org/live/archive.cfm is where we post the audio files.
Live-what?
It's not very easy, but it's at clue-in.org, which is the same page that you were on today, /live/archive.cfm. It's a Cold Fusion interface, I believe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll also post that information on our listservs and some of the other places where we typically do that. All right, thank you all for your participation.
Thanks a lot.